we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, July 7th, 2017. I'm your host, Elise Jacobson, and I'm joined here in the studio today by my co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
Our guest co-host, Jillian Walters.
Hi.
And our control room operator, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
Welcome, everyone.
And our doggy, Paisley.
Oh, and our doggy, Paisley. That's
had to
right.
Say hi.
Today's show is dedicated to celebrating the gentle giant among farmed animals, the cow. Our first interview coming up in about 15 minutes is with Lucy Cherney, founder and director of Rasta Animal Sanctuary and Rescue in Chemainus, BC. She'll be sharing with us her experiences rescuing animals and taking care of them at the sanctuary, with a special focus on the cows she has rescued and loved. Our feature interview is with James O'Toole, an activist with Toronto Cow Save. He'll be telling us all about the work Toronto Cow Save does at Toronto area cow slaughterhouses, bearing witness to cows on their way to slaughter and documenting the process for the world to see. This interview is sure to be eye-opening and informative, and it's coming up in just over half an hour, so stay tuned. But first, we'd like to chat a little bit about cows we have met and gotten to know over the years. So, Jillian, you've met a few really close to home, right?
Yes, I love cows. I think cows, you know, when you're a kid growing up, you have like a favorite animal and people always buy you like little ornaments, you know, and you get a collection of ornaments. Well, mine was the cow. And
I gave my sister a cow ornament for Christmas last year. I know she's listening to this.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I'm going to melt. I just love cows. I've been recently visiting Desi and Sparky at the Happy Herd, and I really like Desi.
Oh, yeah. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Desi yet, but I've seen lots of pictures.
And... yeah, I often post pictures saying, this is my boyfriend, Desi.
Oh, yeah. Is Desi a boy? Because he has
yes.
the most beautiful eyelashes.
Oh, right. Yeah,
I know.
He very much looks like a of the feminine type. And Sparky's my sister's boyfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's probably listening to this. She just loves Sparky. We went there last summer. And Liana, my sister, she just fell in love with Sparky. And Desi, they're such gentle giants, right? And they
yeah.
just... I saw a video with Dominic Thompson, who we had on the show recently.
Yes.
He's with, I think it's him and Desi.
Yeah.
He posted it on YouTube or something earlier this week or last week. And it got many thousand views, showing that, you know, men can be masculine and show love towards animals, such as these gentle giants, the cows. And Desi was showing him love. And I just find that to be so beautiful and touching and heartwarming. And every time... I see videos or pictures of people I know on Facebook, local animal advocates with the cows at Happy Herd. I think that they're just doing such a great job as being ambassadors for
mm-hmm.
all
exactly.
the other cows out there that are caught up in like Desi and Sparky. Do you know what their backstories are? I don't quite remember myself.
No, I'm not sure exactly.
Speaking of Desi, though, I know there was a video that actually went viral from the Happy Herd of Desi with
and,
his best friend Lucy
and
the
Lucy.
Pig.
See
right?
the pig when
yeah.
they're babies.
Lucy and
oh,
Desi.
Yeah, Desi yeah, was a calf.
So
that's
yeah.
under one of the best videos you will ever see
right.
and under that brand. And that's at the Happy Herd if you ever see that. I know I've posted that several times on our Facebook page.
Yeah, it's so cute.
It's amazing. It's awesome.
And, they're just
and,
babies.
And cows are just wonderful creatures. And I think like they don't get the attention that they deserve. So that's why we're appreciating cows today.
Yeah, they are mm-hmm. so gentle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Allison, you've met some others at other sanctuaries, right? Like at
yeah.
the Gentle Barn?
Oh, right. The Gentle Barn. So because that was unfortunately was posted earlier about a week ago that The Gentle Barn, we've had Ellie Lacks on the show before a couple of times. Ellie is the founder of The Gentle Barn, which has locations. Its main location is just outside of Los Angeles in California. And then they have a location in Tennessee. And I know they have another one too that they are starting because there was a rescue that was happening there. And anyways, Ian, if you ever get a chance to, please read Ellie's book called The Gentle Barn. It's about her story of growing up wanting to rescue animals and making that dream into a reality. And so, and then she talks about starting the sanctuary and basically making her dreams come into a reality where she just wanted to be surrounded by animals and take all the neglected animals that actually no one wanted, like no, that no one would take to any other sanctuaries because they were broken physically and emotionally. And a program that she started at all of her sanctuaries is that she'll take in children who are also broken, like in school programs or programs where they're brought there because they're coming out of foster homes and crime and they're kids who are broken. And these are children who won't listen to adults. They won't, some of them don't even speak. They'll go the whole time without speaking. But then they come to the Gentle Barn and Ellie will speak to the children through the animal's stories, saying, this cow, this is his story or her story, and the kids will identify with that.
They can relate. And,
and then sometimes they'll start talking again. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so one of the things that children love doing at the Gentle Barn, I'm sure they still do, is you can go there and hug a cow. Mm-hmm. And hugging a cow, Jillian, have you hugged a cow before?
Yes,
hugging
many
a cow
times.
Hugging a cow is like just one of the most beautiful and natural things that you could ever do. And it's just such a very calming and I would say it's therapy, like it's emotional therapy to be able to hug a cow. So anyways, just one of the most beautiful things you could do. But unfortunately, one of their cows, Dudley, who they had for the last 2 years at Tennessee, he just died and he left a real imprint in their hearts for sure. Mm-hmm. I know with Ellie, she used to write about him. And so she blogged about that recently. So, I mean, really, cows, when you get to know them, there's so many videos. Sinead, I don't know if you posted any of those videos online, but when I knew it was going to be Cow Appreciation Week, I sent you a bunch of stuff. And there's a couple of them. It's like, why cows are just big dogs. I don't know. Did you?
For sure.
Yeah. So why are cows just big dogs? Because they're like, or big puppies, because they lick you like a puppy and they give you love like a puppy and they hug you like a puppy. You can go to the Gentle Barn or at other places too, I'm sure, and give a cow a big, meaningful, just loving hug and they enjoy it because just like we relate to dogs, they're the same. Just like Paisley here, who's sitting down here, just like Paisley loves to be loved, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Paisley seems very affectionate. I don't know her too well, but she's just, you know, she's just a dog who loves to love. Well, so do cows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're really no different.
Absolutely.
So yeah, Cow Appreciation Week here at Animal Voices. Yeah, Paisley, we know.
In a world where radio is everything, none but the chosen few, or anyone who buys a membership, can gain entrance into the uber, ultra, super secret inner sanctum of Vancouver Co-op Radio. And not since the early times in the 1970s has the opportunity arisen. Except for pretty well every single day since the 1970s, for the common person to join the near 1,200 strong that make up Vancouver Co-op Radio. Only those with the skills to operate a computer or a phone, or for the brave few show up in person, will have the opportunity to join our quest in bringing diverse and inclusive programming to the masses. A perilous journey, not for the faint of heart. But if you have a faint heart, you can still join because we're all inclusive. Are you up to the task? Do you have what it takes? Find out by going to cooperadio.org. Your future awaits.
And now for some news. Last week, St. Michael's Hospital announced a study claiming that children who drink non-cow's milk are shorter than children who drink cow's milk, generating international headlines. Now concerns are being raised about the integrity of the study and the honesty of its lead researcher, Jonathan McGuire. McGuire has concealed his involvement with the dairy industry, and this isn't his first time. Now Animal Justice is calling on St. Michael's Hospital to stop accepting funds from the industry lobbyists to maintain integrity in the scientific research.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I mean, it is and it isn't. You know, yeah. This happens all the time. I feel like most of the time, if you see a study claiming that dairy or meat or whatever is essential to health or essential to children's growth, it's usually like, okay, where's the funding for this coming from, right?
Exactly. So, I'm just glad that it's getting mainstream attention.
For sure. Yeah. I think it speaks to the importance of looking critically at articles about scientific studies as well, because I find often journalists will sort of hype up the findings, you know, for clickbait and, you know, to make a juicy headline or whatever. Mm-hmm. But often when you actually read the article, it's like, well, okay, the study didn't really find what they're sort of implying that it found, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Also, a new bill will make testing of shampoo, soap, perfume, and other cosmetic products illegal in Australia by July 2018.
That's animal testing?
And that's coming soon. Yeah. It's not one of those things where they say, oh, we'll phase it out in 10 years. This is happening next year. That's great news.
1 year from now. That's amazing.
And they got huge, huge public support to introduce the ban. So hopefully that'll spread.
Yeah, that's good. I think that I've been hearing about other countries implementing similar bans lately. You know, it's just sort of one by one. That's great.
Yeah. Have you guys seen the BBC debuted a video documenting the triumphant release of former beef farmer Jay Wild's 63 cow herd to a local animal sanctuary? It's received over 1 million views, I think.
Yeah, I did see that video, actually. Yeah, that was pretty amazing. So he was a, it was a family business, his cow farm, right? And he sort of inherited it.
And he's a vegetarian.
Yeah, he was. That's right. But he was still, for some reason, raising cows to slaughter and then eventually just couldn't do it anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he would have received £45,000 for selling the cows, but that's 58,000 or 58,000 Canadian. Wow. But instead, he chose to relocate them to the sanctuary.
Yeah, and he's going to start farming crops, right? Like doing vegan farming? Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the story that we had on the show, if you remember, last year for World Vegan Day. We interviewed a farmer, Mike Brannigan. Is that his name? Do you remember, Elise?
No, I don't.
So he's located in Eastern Canada, Ontario. And same thing, change of heart. He decided to transform. He had like 19 or 20 cows. He decided to transform his farm into an animal sanctuary and to grow vegetables instead of growing animals to be eaten. Mm-hmm. So if he can do it, and if that's what this story about the farmer in England really reminded me of, and hopefully, you know, hopefully more farmers will be inspired and they can follow this model and see that it's actually like a way that it's actually a solution, something that they can do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I've heard lots of similar stories over the last couple of years, actually, of farmers, you know, farmers who are farming animals in some way, giving it up and going vegan. Yeah, it's
pretty amazing. The Mad Cowboy.
That's right. Yeah. Howard Lyman. He's the famous one for sure. Yeah.
There's some breaking news, actually. Yesterday, I think I read this. The University of Windsor is opening a cutting-edge new research institution called the Canadian Centre for Alternatives to Animal Methods.
That's amazing. That's great news.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're stopping animal testing at their university. That's what this is coming out of, right?
Cool.
Yeah. I think we're going to have them on the show at some point, even maybe next week. We're doing a show all about animal testing next week. So
yeah, that would be great.
But that'll be coming up, I think, because that's, I think that's really important, and it's Canadian too.
Yeah.
Our first guest today is Lucy Cherney, founder and director of Rasta Sanctuary, a cageless, no-kill sanctuary for animals located in Chemainus, BC. Named after Lucy's beloved late dog, Rasta is a registered Canadian charity devoted to animal rescue and protection through public education. Hello, Lucy, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So first of all, can you give us some background information on Rasta Sanctuary? When was it founded and what's the journey been like so far?
Yeah, for sure. Basically, the sanctuary was founded in 2001, so just about 17 years ago in southern Alberta. We were in DeWinton, Alberta for many of those years. And basically, we are a registered charity. And when we started up, we had a unique non-discriminatory approach to animal rescue. Basically, we took in animals regardless of breed, size, age, or species. There's a number of rescue organizations that at the time were only taking in certain breeds of animals or certain ages or excluded a certain species. So we took a unique non-discriminatory approach, no-kill and cageless philosophy, in that our no-kill policy mandates that only terminally ill or fatally injured animals are ever euthanized, and cageless in that our animals enjoy freedom within limits, within the boundaries of the sanctuary, but they enjoy as much freedom within their own species and among other species. And eventually, we started focusing more on farm animal rescue, because where we were in southern Alberta, there actually wasn't any rescues organizations for farm animals or sanctuaries or anything of the sort. And this led to an eventual evolution to an actual farm sanctuary. We were the first and only farm sanctuary in Alberta and the Prairie Provinces for well over a decade before other organizations started stepping up and helping out, essentially inspiring the farm sanctuary movement. I'm very proud to say that today there are actually quite a few different farm animal rescues and farm sanctuaries in both Alberta as well as Saskatchewan and Manitoba. And 2 years ago, in the late summer of 2015, it was a dream to relocate the animals for many years, basically, especially after a number of sanctuaries started coming up and helping out in Alberta and around us, to relocate to a milder climate for the animals that we had in our care, as well as for sustainability reasons and to help farm animals in an area that didn't have farm animal rescue. So we had our sights on Vancouver Island for a while. And in the late summer of 2015, we actually made that happen. It took 5 trips through the mountains to get all the animals across, just a huge ordeal as far as building the new sanctuary from the ground up here in Chemainus, as well as starting a new support base and so on.
Right on. So how many animals currently live at Rasta, and which species?
We currently have 62 animals. There are 34 pot-bellied pigs. We've got 2 swine pigs, several farm birds that involve ducks, geese, and chickens. There's a couple of donkeys, a miniature horse, some goats, llamas, a couple of dogs, a few cats, and Theodore, our 3,000-pound rescued steer that was initially a rescued veal calf, who's now all grown up. He's 10 years old, and he weighs about 3,000 pounds.
Wow. So as you know, our show today is focused on cows, and Theodore, as you say, is the only bovine living at Rasta right now. Can you tell us a little bit more about his story?
Yeah, at the moment we just have the one steer. So he was a rescued veal calf. A steer is a castrated male, for anybody that doesn't know. Cows are actually females of the bovine family. And Theodore's story, he was discarded on a dead pile when he was born. There was something wrong with him, so he was just thrown off on a pile to die, basically. And it's quite common, especially in the industrialized factory farming industry, when an animal's only worth $20, the average farmer, especially on these big industrial farms, isn't likely to spend $300 on a vet bill. So a lot of times these animals are just hit over the head with a hammer or just thrown off on a dead pile to die. And Theodore came to me in the back seat of a car when he was just the size of just a big dog, basically, and he was in pretty rough shape. He spent a lot of time at our vet initially, and basically I bottle raised him, and this is now 10 years later, where he's grown up into a big boy, a big ambassador for his own species and essentially for the dairy industry to educate people about, you know, what goes on. And a lot of people don't realize that calves are a part of the dairy equation there. And Theo, the world record holder for the biggest steer in the world was 6'6 to the spine, and Theodore is about 6'3 or 6'4. And the crazy thing about steers is testosterone actually limits growth. So when bulls are not castrated, they're much shorter and stockier when they're fully grown, whereas steers, when you castrate them, they actually grow their entire life. So Theodore, as big as he is now, he's still growing, and he may actually one day be the biggest. He's about 6'3 or 6'4, so he's a couple inches away from being the biggest steer in the world at this point.
Pretty good for someone who wasn't supposed to make it through the first night. So can you tell us, what are some of your favorite things about cows, about bovines? Among all the other farmed animals, what stands out to you about cattle?
Basically, their gentle nature really strikes you, especially how big they are. They're just truly gentle giants. They're very emotional animals. They form very strong bonds with their families and their friends, and they have all have, you know, unique personalities, and they have stronger friendships with some as opposed to others. And there's just so much more to them than a lot of people realize. Theodore, specifically, when people come to the sanctuary, he's one of their favorite animals. Most people just say that it's just such an honor to meet him. He's just such an incredible guy and just so peaceful and, you know, laid back. He has his full horns. We did not cut off his horns. Most cows, whether they're male or female, typically have their horns cut off when they're babies, just because farmers typically don't want them to have that defense to defend themselves. And Theo, with his giant horns and his giant self, he's just a really impressive guy. And he, at the end of the day, is just a big, gentle giant, just like a big dog.
So they're like giant dogs, but cows typically get treated a lot differently than dogs are in this country. What do you wish more people knew about cows and what they experience on farms?
Well, I guess the biggest thing for me would be just to get more information out there about the dairy industry. We host educational tours at the sanctuary here, and a big part of that is the educational component where we talk about factory farming. And the when I get onto the topic of dairy, it blows my mind how many people to this day think that cows just give milk, just automatically out of the goodness of their heart. They're like pop machines that are just constantly full of milk. And in order for a cow to lactate, just like any other species, whether it's dog, cat, human, they need to be pregnant, which means that there's a baby that's part of that equation. And typically, within the first 24 hours of being born, especially on these industrial factory farms, within that first 24 hours, the calves are generally taken away from their mothers. And that's the last time that they ever see each other. And the calves are either slaughtered that very same day for something called bob veal, or they're put into veal crates or veal hutches, those little white plastic doghouse looking things you see when you drive by dairy farms. Those are all individual little huts where calves are separated from their mothers. And they're essentially immobilized in these huts for 4 to 6 months. And they don't want them to walk around very much. They don't want them to develop muscle because they want their meat to stay very tender, known as the delicacy as veal. And at about 4 or 6 months of age is when they're slaughtered. And when I talk about this, a lot of people say, oh my gosh, veal is just horrible. It's just, I would never eat that. That's tortured baby calf. However, the unfortunate reality is that the veal calves are just a byproduct of the dairy industry. And so if people are, whether they're drinking milk or eating ice cream or cheese, purchasing these products, essentially they're funding the veal industry, where most people find it to be horrifically cruel. So it's really just about making that connection and the awareness. You know, the Maya Angelou's famous quote there, when you know better, you do better.
Mm-hmm. Some people might be driven to purchase dairy products from a labeled humane organic farm, things with those labels to make themselves feel better. But these same practices do happen on so-called humane farms as well, don't they?
They do. Some things are a little bit better, you know, how they care for the cows or whatnot. But at the end of the day, the babies, again, are killed for the milk. The ironic thing is they don't actually get the milk from their mothers. They're fed like a watered-down formula, milk replacement formula, and the milk is actually collected for higher purposes, which they label for human purposes. The cows develop mastitis, swelling of the udder. They're forced to produce 10 times more milk than they would actually to sustain a calf. So it's such a tremendous strain on their bodies. And the average dairy cow's life is about 4 to 6 years, after which time she's just so crippled and so spent that she's generally slaughtered and replaced with another cow. Cows can live well into their 20s. And people also ask me if organic is any better. Organic is an emphasis on what the animals are fed as opposed to the actual animal welfare benefit. So it's a human benefit basically from the organic side of it. And in some cases, organic is actually more cruel because if a cow sustains an injury or has an infection, the farmer's prohibited from using antibiotics because they could lose their organic labeling. So if it's bad enough, you know, the cows are often left to suffer and it's bad enough, then they slaughter them and just replace them with a younger cow at that point.
When you think about all the things that you mentioned before about the nature of cows and how they form bonds with each other and friendships, then you think about, yeah, the impact that it has on them if they're being constantly bred and having their babies taken away. And I've heard humane labeled farmers say that the most humane thing to do is to take the babies from the mothers as soon as they're born to keep them from forming that bond. But just as with any mammal, you can imagine that it would be incredibly stressful and horrific to be in their position.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to think about it, you know, for a few minutes yourself, to put yourself in that situation, what it would be like. And a lot of people also don't realize that the way that cows are bred, majority of it is artificial insemination, and it's forcibly bred. So essentially these cows are raped, and then their babies are stolen. And this is just a horrific cycle that continues, you know, until they're killed themselves. So that's the biggest thing I guess we would really like to get out there is just more education about the dairy industry itself and what that means, you know, when you go out and buy an ice cream cone, just the cruelty and the suffering behind it.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the Rasta Sanctuary Support Challenge.
So we have, it's a $30 sanctuary support challenge, and essentially what we're looking for is 100 sanctuary supporters to sign up to donate $30 a month for a year. That works out basically a dollar a day. It's not a lot of money for the average person, but it definitely adds up for the sanctuary. Having relocated from Alberta, we were a well-established sanctuary and a charity where we were. However, when we relocated to the island, we lost some of our Alberta supporters to some people that want to support locally. And we've had to build basically the new sanctuary from the ground up, meaning building fences and shelters. And we desperately need to build a new barn for the animals and things like that. And we've also had to build a new donor support base, basically new sanctuary supporters. So having this challenge in place helps to basically bring in a budget that we can rely on to help build, you know, help get a little bit more established in our new community. Signing up for the challenge is super easy. It's just a matter of logging onto our website, rastarescue.org, and clicking on the Donate Now button. We have a very secure online donating partner, Canada Helps, which is another charity, another Canadian charity, and they take care of issuing immediate tax receipts because as a registered charity, we're able to issue tax deductible receipts, which they issue on our behalf. And it just saves on postage and paperwork on our end. And people can choose whatever day of the month they would like the donations to come through. They can use Visa, MasterCard, debit, just loads of other options. So it's just super easy to do. And if people wanted to donate more, if they wanted to sponsor an animal, basically just looking on the website, if there's somebody that pulls at their heartstrings and they would like to sponsor them, then there's also the option to do that and on whatever day they choose of the month.
Right on. What else can our listeners do to help support your work at Rasta and to help animals in general?
The single most important thing, most effective thing that anybody can do to help animals is to stop eating them. It's really as simple as that. Basically, educating yourself about what the animals go through and things like that. We do host educational tours here at the sanctuary where a little portion of it is just speaking about factory farming. And then we take people around to visit with the animals one-on-one and make that connection. And however, by just simply reducing, it's just a simple supply and demand issue, really. So by reducing that demand, the supply is reduced. And the fact is that animal agriculture is no longer sustainable by our planet anymore. With the human population growing as much as it is and staying alive longer, it's just not a sustainable option. So the question is, you know, how much we're going to destroy the planet and how many more animals will suffer before we realize that this is just not a sustainable option.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Animal Voices today, Lucy, and for all the work that you're doing. That just sounds great. And thanks for sharing your insights and experiences with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate that.
If you'd like to learn more about Rasta Sanctuary, schedule a visit, or support the work that they do, you can visit their website at rastarescue.org.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, Coast Salish Territories. We're going to play a song for you now. This is Bandish Project featuring Last Mango in Paris and MC Todd Fod with Cows.
Global vegetarian domination, one Marcy at a time. So I'm a little bit Jadu, 2.0 Zadu in cahoots with the roots and also Erica Badu. I'm the indubitable cowboy. You say when and I say why not make it now, boy. Get a pickle bok choy, 808s, 303s. I've got cows in my studio making beats. Birds, bees, butterflies and trees. All of these are part of my blood family. I got Ganesh in the living room getting it on. And he ain't leaving till the pigeons in the morning. Hanuman the monkey hanging in my kitchen. Assume the position, crow, pigeon. Swing your bottom over, do the disco cobra. Do the mashed potato through my golden gato. Do your salutation to the sun-dried tomaticas. Do you down with dog and then you're down with hippopotamus.
I've got cows in different parts of my house. Parts of my house. I've got cows. I've got cows in different parts of my house. Parts of my house.
Tour 4 representing Swadeshi, Mumbai, and especially the cows. Yeah. Gai mari mata ne tame ene khata hame ana bhave sharam ave avatauta dudhari mari bhavna gai abo kamna eto motyo na bhavma sharoma akha gama dud ape barabar upyogi a janavar sukhai ne majha kar tu jag nu vinash kar vishwas kar pani thi pavitra go mutra tu man buddh kem katara mate
bhavu gobar. Every day is a holy day and every animal's a holy thing, so please try to stop eating them. The goat is my friend, the cow is my brother. He got great big eyes and fantastic swinging udders. This is my sister, her name is Susmita. Why would I want to chop her up and eat her? Oh, the very thought is sickening. So when you cook up vegetables, why would you put chicken in? Why would you? More to the point, how could you become a vegetarian? Better still become a Guju. Gandhi was a Gujarati. Take a look at him, sir. Sacked off the British by practicing ahimsa. Non-violence to every living soul. That skinny little bugger was a genius, bro.
Yeah. Four. Yeah, that's how we do it. Ghas khaye manav ne mas khaye dano. Mas machi chodo ne dal bhat khao. Mari kao tari gai apne beu bhai bhai. Jem shakahari khao, Gujarati bani jao. Shak bhaji pakdo ne chodo kabab pao. Sathe kaki na rotla limu dungri nu swad. Tu khima par juto akalyug nu paap. Rasayan kem karto shikhas maru ghas.
Cow,
yeah.
I've got cows in different parts of my house. Parts of my house. Cows, I've got cows in different parts of my house. Parts of my house. Cows.
Our feature interview today is with James O'Toole, an activist with the SAVE movement in Toronto. The SAVE movement is a network of groups around the world that bear witness to cows, pigs, chickens, and other farmed animals en route to slaughter. The movement started in 2010 in Toronto, and today there are over 130 SAVE groups worldwide. Hello, James, and welcome to Animal Voices.
Hi, thank you for having me.
For sure. Thank you for being here. So first of all, can you tell us a little more about the SAVE movement? What is your mission and what does your activism usually involve?
Sure. Well, first of all, we've actually got over 170 groups right now. We've been expanding hugely in the last 12 to 18 months, so that's great. But the group started in 2010 when Anita Klant, the co-founder, along with her companion animal dog Mr. Bean, were walking along a street in Toronto called Lakeshore, and they noticed transport trucks when they're out on the morning walk full of pigs. So Anita's first thought was, well, somebody should do something about this. And then she realized that, you know, if you want to be the change, you have to make those choices yourself. So she decided to do something about it herself. And within a few months, Trout Pig Save were holding regular weekly vigils, bearing witness to pigs arriving for slaughter.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit more about what does bearing witness mean and what does that entail?
Well, bearing witness is really meeting the victims of animal agriculture. Not turning away, which is what that's kind of what people's first reaction is when they see an injustice, that they don't want to look at it, they don't want to see it. It's easier to turn away. But on the contrary, if you actually face that injustice, shine a light on it, and try and raise awareness, you can really, really help make a difference. And so that's the first kind of point, is to raise awareness of what's happening. And the second is to be there for the animals, show them some compassion. They've never received any compassion in their whole lives. And in the final moments before they arrive at slaughter, is to meet the victims, show them compassion, and let them know that we are against this and we're there for them. And they really understand that, and they really make a connection with us.
Yeah, that's great. So how long have you been involved with the SAVE movement?
I've been involved for, I think, 3 years now. I first volunteered in 2014, yeah.
Great. And tell us a little bit more about your own journey to becoming an animal rights activist. Was there kind of a single moment or experience that was the catalyst for you to getting involved, or was it more of a slow transition?
Sure, yeah. Well, I was vegan for about 3 years before I became an activist. I became vegan actually because I lived on a street where there was a slaughterhouse, and I would see the trucks when I was walking with my dog, and I decided to go vegetarian at first, and then I read a book called Skinny Bitch, which really kind of highlighted the atrocities in the dairy industry. So after that, I became vegan. And then about 3 years later, well, at first, it kind of like, when I went vegan, it felt like a weight to be enlisted. I didn't know it was there. It felt incredible. But after a while, it kind of started weighing on my shoulders that I wasn't actually doing anything to fight this injustice. And simply being vegan is not enough. And I think we all have a duty, those of us who've made the connection, to raise awareness and try and help people make the connection themselves. We've all been conditioned from infancy to believe that meat and dairy are normal, natural, necessary, and none of those things are true. So those of us who've made the connection, I think we all have a duty to help everybody else kind of see the truth of animal agriculture. So I decided to get involved, and Toronto Pig Save, I was familiar with the group because I'd seen them at their vigils at the intersection in Toronto. So I decided to go along and bear witness. And the very first time I did that, it really changed me. When you meet the victims, it's an incredibly profound experience. And animal rights went from something I cared about, but it became a focus point of my life. It became basically what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, was try and raise awareness and be trustees to animals.
That's wonderful. So in your work with the SAVE movement and with Toronto Cow Save specifically, you've borne witness at the two cow slaughterhouses in Toronto. Can you describe what that's like?
Yeah, it's a very difficult environment, as I'm sure you can imagine. There are two cow slaughterhouses right opposite each other on one street, and there's also a tannery at the end of the street where they take the skins from the slaughtered animals and turn them into leather. So we go witness there. In the mornings, the cows arrive in the trucks. They are always terrified. Sometimes they're crying. 100% they're aware what's happening. They look for us for help, and we try and give them compassion. We try and show them affection. Often there are cows injured on the truck, cows that can't stand up. They're all crammed together. It's like really filthy conditions on these trucks, and the cows are in immense suffering. And then at one of the particular slaughterhouses, Riding Regency, in the afternoons, right on the street, they dump the severed heads of cows that have arrived for slaughter into a truck, which they take for incineration. Because I think it's about 18 months, cows that are killed after 18 months because of BSC, they have to be incinerated, the heads. So they dump them into this truck, and you can see them, the severed heads, and often fetuses of unborn calves, because a lot of the cows they kill are dairy cows, so they're often pregnant when they're killed, and we see severed heads and fetuses every single day. And so we're able to devour into the cows in the morning and then see the heads in the afternoon. And also in the late afternoon, early evening, they bring two trucks of cows that stay in a holding pen overnight to be killed first thing the following morning. And cows are very good sense of smell. You know, the blood, they're aware what's happening to you. You just only imagine how horrific that must be for those cows to spend the night in the slaughterhouse prior to being killed the next morning. So it's absolutely horrific. The everything about it is absolutely horrific.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
Hi, James. It's Jill here. I was going to ask you a question. I'm just kind of stuck with the, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm speechless right now. Is there anything above what you've said that you wish more people knew about the cows and what slaughterhouses are like?
Yeah, I mean, it is horrific. I think what we do is very important because we take photos and videos of what we see and we post that on social media, on our Facebook and Instagram accounts, with the sole purpose of raising awareness and so more people see this. Because if people saw what we see, what they contribute to, if they're not vegan, like I'm very confident people would stop doing it. And every day you see something crazy, something different. Just last week, you can imagine with all these, they kill about 300 cows a day at that location and there's a lot of blood. And the blood gets pumped into what looks like kind of gas trucks. And one day last week, the pipe taking the blood into the truck had become disconnected, and thousands of liters of blood was just pouring all over the floor and just down a drain. And we were able to live stream that, show people that, and when people see that, I mean, we get so many messages, people saying they've gone vegan because of the images that we post. So I think, to answer your question, I think if I could take anything away from it, it would be I wish vegetarians would understand that by consuming dairy, they are supporting that industry, that they're paying for these cows to be killed. I was vegetarian myself for a year before I'm vegan. There's no judgment here. It's just information, I think. And same with eggs, obviously. Day-old chicks, male chicks, are basically ground up alive. And so I think there's so many vegetarians who think they are making a difference. And obviously, it's great. It's better being vegetarian than not. But they're still contributing to such unnecessary suffering.
Yeah, thank you. I think we're all pretty stunned in the studio here. All the jaws are on the table. Yeah, that is horrifying stuff. Are there any memories from the cow slaughterhouses that have particularly stuck with you? Any individuals that you've met that stood out?
Yeah, there was the first time I saw fetuses getting dumped into a truck. That really stayed with me. That was very, very powerful. I didn't know that I was going to see that. I didn't know that the because I think that my understanding is they're not allowed to kill cows in a pregnant, but like we see it every single day now. So the first time I saw fetal calves being thrown into a dumpster was very, very hard to see. And another time earlier this year, I saw a cow arrive in the morning, and then later that day, when they were dumping the head, a head fell onto the ground. It didn't go into the truck. It fell onto the ground, and I could swear it was one of the same cows I'd met. Well, it definitely was one of the cows that arrived that morning, but I think it was one that I spent some time with. So that really stayed with me. It was very traumatizing.
Jeez. yeah. I'm sorry. This is nervous laughter. It's not funny. Yeah, I just want to say I really appreciate you and your compatriots that are doing this work, because this obviously is extremely difficult. It's horrifying to even hear about it, mm-hmm. but it's so important. So thank you. What are some things that our listeners can do right now to help cows and other farmed animals?
Well, I think the main thing people can do, especially vegans, is, like I said earlier, being vegan isn't enough. Simply not participating in these atrocities, it doesn't really help. 70 billion animals a year getting killed, land animals at that. So we need to raise awareness. We need to break the disconnect of people who still think this is normal. And I read a report last week saying there are now 20 million vegans in the United States. If all those vegans became activists, we'd achieve animal liberation way, way quicker. Mm-hmm. So that would be like my call to action, my plea to vegans out there is please become active. I understand it can appear daunting. Like I said earlier as well, it took me 3 years before I actually became an activist. And I should add that probably it took me a year out of those 3 years was thinking about becoming an activist. And I kept putting it off. I kept thinking, no, it's not for me. But we owe it to these animals. We have a duty to either bear witness or help them in some other way. There are so many different activist groups now, the SAVE movement, CETA, DXE. Just whatever form of activism suits you, please do it. Just get involved and try and raise awareness and break the disconnect and help people understand that they don't need to support these atrocities.
Absolutely. That's good advice. So how can our listeners get involved with the SAVE movement or support the work that you're doing?
Well, we have, like I said earlier, we have social media. We're all over social media. We've got Facebook, Instagram. You can contact us through our website. Email us at savemovementinfo@gmail.com to start a group in your area or on our website, savemovement.org. There's a list of all the groups. So if there's a group in your area, please go. If there's not, contact us about starting a group. And, it's a life-changing experience, and I'm sure your listeners will really benefit from it, and obviously the animals will as well.
Absolutely, yeah. And if any local listeners are wondering, I know that we have a couple of SAVE groups in the Lower Mainland. There's Langley Pig Save, Port Coquitlam Animal Save, and I think there's one more that I'm not remembering. Does anyone remember?
The Surrey Chicken Save Surrey and Chicken Vancouver Save. Chicken Save.
That's right.
Vancouver Chicken Save has its vigils without fail every Saturday at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse.
Right. Thank you, Allison. So what does that involve, starting a SAVE group? How would you advise that people go about that?
Well, the first thing to do is to contact us, and we can, I mean, there's a guide on our website with some starter points. We're available, activists, organizers in Toronto and elsewhere, actually, as well. It's a big community of organizers, and we're always ready to help people who want to get involved. So we can have, like, a Google Hangout or a Skype call, whatever, and go through some of the apps to start a group. Basically, it's find a slaughterhouse in your area, kind of scope it out a little bit, see where it's a good place to put a witness. And I think the main thing that I always tell people is just do it, just get started. It's an evolving process. The first vigil, it's just like a 3-hour or 2-hour vigil, however long it is. Even if no trucks come, it can still be a powerful experience. The LA Animal Save we have, the first vigil we had there, no, we didn't see any trucks, but it inspired so many people to become active and get involved, because even being at the slaughterhouse, it's a very, very powerful experience, especially with like-minded people there. So just get involved. Get a group started, and then every week you've got a fresh opportunity to have another vigil, and you'll just improve and get better. And the animals, we really owe it to the animals to be there, because if we're not there, I think that's one thing. I go to Full Health very, like, a lot. I go very frequently, because I feel those animals are arriving for slaughter whether we're there or not. And if we're there, at least we acknowledge them. At least we acknowledge that this is wrong. We can show them some compassion. And it really makes a huge difference. So please get involved.
Absolutely. And the documentation can be so effective too. Like you were saying, your videos have really touched people and inspired a lot of people to stop eating animals. And it seems like that's a huge thing that people can do, is just be there, like you said, acknowledge the animals and also document what they're going through.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being here on Animal Voices today, James, and for sharing all of your experiences with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
If you'd like to learn more about the SAVE movement or get involved, visit thesavemovement.org.
All right, and now for some events. On Saturday, July 15th, I want to plug this one, at Pat's Pub, we're going to have a rock and roll animal extravaganza. Night of the Neophytes is going to be an evening of vegan food and music. What's not to like about that?
I know, that's why I'm going.
Yeah, there will be a catered dinner from plant-based food and natural products. That's David Isbister. And 6 local rock and roll bands, including myself, Sinead Sanders, The Furniture, The Split Talkers, we'll call them, Beaverette, Siobhan Duval, Daisy Stranglers, These are all female-fronted bands, and they're all great, if I do say so myself. And we're going to have Anna Pippis doing a talk about the importance of eating vegan food and animal rights in general. So tickets are $25. This is a great deal. That's $10 for six bands and Anna Pippis, and $15 for the dinner from Plant Based. And that on its own is an awesome deal because his dinners are amazing. So $15 for that dinner is great. But if you want to get in on the dinner, and you definitely do, then you have to get your tickets by this Sunday, July 9th. So contact any of the bands. You can also write to us at Animal Voices and get your tickets as soon as you can. I'll be at Roaring Silence tomorrow, which Jillian will tell you about in a minute. So if you want to get tickets from me, I'll be at Roaring Silence. $25 Saturday, July 15th at Pat's Pub. Be there.
That's right, Sinead. Exactly 24 hours from now, hundreds of people will be gathering at Morton Park in Vancouver to be part of the first Roaring Silence demonstration in North America. Roaring Silence is a silent demonstration that brings awareness and heightens compassion for the billions of animals who are killed each year. Animals that are exploited, confined, and tortured in the food and fur industries for research, for entertainment, fashion, and as decoration. Remember that this demonstration requires no knowledge of public speaking or confrontation. The organizers are hoping that people who have never joined in march or protest will attend. This is also a family-friendly event. So, have you heard about the contest? Vegan Supply is offering a $25 gift certificate to people that pose in their Roaring Silence t-shirts and take a photo of themselves roaring. You can upload that to Instagram or Facebook and tag Vegan Supply.
I saw your photo, Jillian.
Yeah.
I don't think you were wearing pants, but I'm not quite sure. So if you want to see a picture of that, it's actually on our website on the front there, animalvoices.org, because we did an interview with the organizer, Daphna Kedem, last week, and there's some of those pictures of people wearing their t-shirts, some with or without pants.
We actually did a walk of the... where we're going to walk last week, and I just want to remind everybody that it's going to be super hot, so please wear a hat and bring lots of water.
Sunscreen.
Yeah. The other event that I want to remind people is to please purchase their tickets to see Dr. Lori Marino, president of the Whale Sanctuary Project. Mm-hmm. She's going to be speaking at the Roundhouse on July 11th from 7 to 10. Dr. Marino will be speaking about the groundbreaking effort to create a new ocean sanctuary for former captive whales and for the rehabilitation of wild whales. And BC is shortlisted as a location. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Marino is an internationally known neuroscientist and researcher in animal behavior and intelligence.
We had her on the show, actually, I think last year for World Oceans Day. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
And she's also featured in the documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered.
That's right. And she's in Blackfish as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. I just got my tickets this morning and I'm bringing my son. It's a kid-friendly event. So
excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jillian and Sinead, for that. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, July 14th. We'll be interviewing Dr. Ray Greek about alternatives to animal testing. That will be exciting. We were just talking earlier on the show about the new center that's opening up in Windsor, you said, right? Mm-hmm. University of Windsor, for investigating alternatives to animal testing. That is the wave of the future, so that's very exciting. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver, and on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We're currently looking for volunteers to produce, co-host, operate the control room, help with website maintenance and social media, and more. If you have skills and interest in any of these areas, as well as a passion for animal advocacy, please do drop us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Training will be provided. So we have an exciting weekend coming up, right, with Roaring Silence and the contest with Vegan Supply and so much coming up. If you want more details about any of that, you can check out our website that will all be on there, Animalvoices.org.
Animalvoices.org.
Send
Sorry.
Us an email at exactly. radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. There was someone who was listening who wanted to know how to make he called me earlier. He wants to know how to make a donation towards the Roar in Silence that's not online. So if he wants, he can send me an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and I'll connect him with Daphna. He wants to just give money, just cool. like the old-fashioned way.
Perfect. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. So coming up next, it's Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.